Carousel is one of Rodgers and Hammerstein's most beloved and controversial musicals. It's about the doomed love between Julie Jordan, a mill worker, and carnival barker Billy Bigelow. It deals with issues of passion, spousal abuse, and suicide. The revival currently at the Imperial Theater of West 45th Street manages to be both tough and transcendent. Ben Brantley in the New York Times says, "The tragic inevitability of Carousel has seldom come across as warmly or as chillingly as it does in this vividly reimagined revival," and says it tingles with the rapture of life and all its contradictions. Joining me here today to talk about it are director Jack O'Brien, Jesse Mueller, who plays Julie, and Lindsay Mendez, who plays Julie's best friend, Carrie. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
So, Jack, I will start with you. Carousel is, as I've just said, sort of a very complicated and a moment's dark musical. What accounts for its continued popularity in your mind?
Well, they don't, as we say, they don't. It's built like a Buick. They don't write them like that anymore.
Right.
First of all, it was based on an European classic, Lilium, by Ferenc Molnár, which in and of itself is almost sui generis, a piece about domestic violence, a piece about gritty life at a carnival, all sorts of things. And it's a fable. It's a fable about a redemption, amongst other things, but it goes to heaven at the end. You don't see that every day. So it's filled with gorgeous music, real characters, real issues that you care about. But when you reduce it, as you just did, to say this is what it's about, you think to yourself, that's no laugh riot, is
right.
it? And yet it is very funny.
We have clam bakes too. I didn't mention that.
Thanks
yes,
for that.
Please. Yeah. Thank yes, you.
That's, we have to eat.
How close does it follow Lilium in terms of plotting and themes?
Fairly close.
Yeah.
As an outline, interestingly enough, Puccini wanted this piece to make an opera out of it. And so did Kurt Weill. Mm-hmm. They both were, quote, there was a bidding war, I think. And Armina Marshall and Lawrence Langner, who ran the Theater Guild at the time, brought Molnár over to see Oklahoma.
All right.
Which they all called the Cowboy Show. And he saw it and said right out loud, these are the guys who should do the show.
Uh-huh.
And so that was the sophomore project of Rodgers and Hammerstein, having done just Oklahoma right. together before. And what a sophomore project it turned out to be.
One could say he knew a good Buick when he saw one, right?
He did. Yeah. He certainly did.
Jesse, why do you think Carrie and Julie are such good friends?
I think because Lindsay. No.
Because yes, she makes it easy.
Because you're such good friends.
Well, yes. I do think that's one of the special things about our production is we have become very good friends through this process. Mm-hmm. And we didn't really know each other before this, but I think they're a good balance for each other. But I think also the relationship is kind of fascinating because they meet you discover them at such a young age, and then you get to watch these women grow up. You get to watch these two women make very different choices with what I would understand a palette of choices that was probably fairly small at that time of, you know, a woman's choices in America and the things that they had access to and the knowledge and education they had. And then you get to see them sort of kind of break apart and live two very different and distinct lives, but they're still love there. I think it's kind of a fascinating relationship to watch.
Do you think it's sort of opposites attracting or the fact that they share sort of this environment or
I
both?
I think it's definitely the shared environment. I think you look at the sort of research that they would have pulled from for the show and the idea that these two young women work in a mill, making fabric all day and possibly sitting side by side and living together and working and eating and then the fact that I think from my perspective, or my Julie, Carrie is everything that Julie sort of wishes she could be. She's so open, and she's so vocal, and she's so vivacious. And I think Julie wants to be around that and wants to be more like that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would just say the same. I think Julie is deep and loving and mysterious, and Carrie is not mysterious. She's everything is right out there.
Yeah. But also very loving, and I think that's one of the things that bring these two women together. They see someone that can be on their side in a situation where they might have been quite isolated. They weren't around their families anymore. They would have been taken away from their families and living in this town.
We had done a lot of research about these millworking girls and talked to Jack a lot about it, and we had kind of discussed that these women, you know, they leave their homes because they have to either support their families, support themselves because they're orphaned.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just thought, wow, they're each other's family.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Lindsay, of course, I need to say congratulations on your Tony for Best Featured Actress in a Musical.
Thank you.
So it's been sitting for a little while now.
yes.
Can you give us, now that you've had a chance to sit with it, a sort of play-by-play of the moment when you found out you won? What was that like for you?
It was overwhelming and wonderful. You know, this whole, for me, this has been the greatest thing I've ever worked on in every possible way. Just the company and our leaders, Jack and everyone. It's just, it's been such a wonderful experience. So to also get that, you know, little prize at the end was just, it was just so lovely. And I felt a real wave of just joy from our theatrical community. And it was such a gift.
It was such a lovely speech you gave. When and by whom were you advised to change your name if you wanted to stay in show business?
By the representation I had at that time. Mm-hmm. I'm from Los Angeles, and I moved to New York after I graduated high school. And at that time, they just said, you're not going to get a lot of work that's not specifically Hispanic if people see that name on the paper. And I thought about it, and I even like put it on my resume to look at it, and then I just thought, oh, my grandparents would just be devastated.
Right.
I can't do that to them, you know?
How long did it take you to come to that decision to figure out that you didn't have to do that? I mean, was that something you sort of realized?
I mean, I'm realizing it now. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I didn't know if I was making a mistake or not, but I just felt I couldn't do it, and if, you know, if it was meant to be, it would be.
Mm-hmm. But we're in a thrilling area of transition now.
Right.
Where in all aspects, we are taking a look at ourselves, at who we are, who we are to each other. And I think a lot of the scales have dropped off, and I think it's thrilling.
100%. That's one of the things I'm most proud of our production is, mm-hmm, I feel it's so diverse. It really does represent what America looks like to me, and that's so thrilling. We can all be telling that story together.
Yeah. I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Jack O'Brien, Jesse Mueller, and Lindsay Mendez from the musical Carousel. Jesse, how different is the music each of these women sings? Do we know? I mean, do you think we know everything we need to know about them that we hear in If I Loved You and When I Marry Mr. Snow from Carrie?
Yeah, well, Jack was sort of speaking about, you know, they don't write them like this anymore. Mm-hmm. This show is so well written that you get so much information from these characters when they sing. And I think because of the setting, they're, you know, they're fairly buttoned up Yankee people, at least, you know, these two women. And certainly Julie, I would say, more than Carrie. But it's in the music that you get their emotion. It's in the music that you get their deepest thoughts and their dreams and their hopes and their wishes. And but even with something like If I Loved You, it's this sort of guarded language. It's not,
right,
I think I love you, or it's the if, it's the conditional.
Well, they're speaking in code.
They're speaking in code, mm-hmm, and it's not until, I think that's, you know, one of the many beautiful messages of the show is, Say what you mean and speak your love for people you love, and don't be afraid of saying the right word, and be honest, and when you have the moment and you have the chance, because life on this earth can be very brief.
Well, we also have to add that Joshua Henry, who's playing Billy, is the first African American, I think, ever cast in this piece. Mm-hmm. And that adds an entirely different sort of aspect to the society and to how people receive it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as if the piece itself isn't complex enough. And as Lindsay says, I mean, we really opened the floodgates in terms of typecasting. I mean, we broke all the rules you could possibly break. Mm-hmm. And it still, not only does it still work, it seems to work better, mm-hmm, in an odd way, because none of those aspects stands out. What you get is the whole
ball of wax.
The humanity of it all. Right.
Absolutely.
Did you know that you wanted to do that casting at the outset, or was it Joshua's audition or the actors that came in that convinced you to do that?
Our inestimable producer, Scott Rudin, who's in a class by himself nearly, when he, when he approached me about this, he saw Josh playing this part. He saw Justin Peck, this extraordinary wunderkind of the New York City Ballet, as the choreographer. And Justin and I saw that we were unrolling what I called a carpet of dance upon which we wanted to build this. We were, every aspect of it was being re-examined from the ground up and opened up. Mm-hmm. And it's exhausting and scary. Scary as hell.
Yeah.
The whole thing, because it's not a typical show. It just isn't. These elements of spirituality, these elements of racial imbalance, these are the threat of domestic violence.
That right, gender politics.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's got everything.
Well, in that examination from the ground up, as you put it, what did you discover?
That these guys who wrote with such passion for their material, they had such respect for the characters and for the story. They dug deep. And we don't get that very often. We're trying these days to fix it. We're trying to get away with it. We're trying to put things on that for a moment, like flash paper, explode with color and light and design. But they don't always tackle issues.
Sure.
And this one does. Mm-hmm. Boy, does it ever.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, Jack, being at a time of transition now. Was there ever trepidation about reviving or excitement about reviving Carousel in the era of the Me Too movement?
I think there was. I think there is. I think there always is. It's a complicated piece. I just didn't go there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I so love this music. And this is one of the great glories of the American musical theater. This is one of the finest pieces we will ever know or ever will have produced.
Mm-hmm.
So beyond and above everything, there was the honor of being given this opportunity. And then look at these people. I mean, Jess and Lindsay and Renee Fleming and
right.
and Joshua and Alexander Gemignani. It went on and on and on. And then adding Justin and the proliferation of great dancing that he brought to the table, we've never seen anything like this before. And I promise you, you will never hear this score sung better ever again.
I'm certainly not going to argue with that one. I'm D.W. Gibson, and I'm speaking with director Jack O'Brien about the new production of Carousel, along with stars Jesse Mueller and Lindsay Mendez. Later on in the show, playwright Jordan Harrison discusses his play Log Cabin at Playwrights Horizons, along with Ian Harvey, who stars in it. Then director Tim Wardle talks about his new documentary, Three Identical Strangers. You're listening to Midday on WNYC. We'll be right back after a break.
Home we'll go.
I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Jack O'Brien, director of the revival of Carousel, along with this, two of the show's stars, Lindsay Mendez and Jesse Mueller. And that was, of course, Jesse Mueller singing the lovely If I Loved You. Jesse and Lindsay, I want to give both of you a chance to chime in on what Jack and I were discussing before the break. Did sort of our moment of cultural awareness and the Me Too movement affect how either of you interpreted the play or approached it?
Well, the first thing actually I thought of when you asked that question was it sort of hit in the middle of our process.
Mm-hmm.
And funnily enough, it was all stuff that was in my mind from the beginning. I've known the show for a long time. I've loved the show. And it was like all of a sudden there was a name for it, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is happening or this could be a part of our awareness. I was like, I'm a woman. I've been aware of this all my life.
Right.
And certainly in the subject matter, I think it was always to me about the authenticity of what it's so essential to part of what it is being a woman, when you feel strong, when you feel self-conscious, when you feel safe, when you don't feel safe. So to me, it was all just part of the subject matter in general. And then, but then sure, once this sort of bigger cultural movement and awareness happened, which I think was wonderful and is wonderful, I just think the perception maybe from the outside
right.
started to change. But what I think is always interesting, it's such a good reminder when you're working on something, it's like I was nervous enough to step into this piece because it's such a classic and it's so beloved, and I was like really nervous to touch it. I was like the song If I Loved You, I was like I never really said to you, Jack, but I was like let's just keep delaying working on that. We'll just hit that one in the last week, right? It felt so precious to me, but it was such a reminder. I can't think of it from the outside. I have to get right on the inside of it. I can't think of it in the macro sense. I have to think of it as a human being living through each second, each moment, each person I interact with. And to me, that is always the way through it. And then you hope you find a core of truth and that's what an audience is going to respond to, whether or not the material is hard to deal with or uncomfortable. The fact that hopefully if you bring truth to something, it can illuminate something bigger.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. A lot of those questions are on the audience's shoulders, right? They're
right.
Open the way for them to
That's
respond
so
to it.
So much about what they're bringing to it.
I think what Jack was saying, we don't do theater to, you know, to say, look at this pretty package. We're challenging the audience to say, what do you think about this?
Exactly.
And,
or to say,
ourselves.
Here's the answer.
Yes.
Here's the answer to a difficult question. We're saying, no, here's more questions
right.
about the difficult subject matter.
But
what
here's
do you think?
The deal. Here's the deal. This is the truth. There's an adage that says casting is 90% of the job. And I just want to reflect on the fact that when you talk about revealing yourselves in the role mm-hmm. and the things that you discover, what actually happened was that we started at the top of the show. We did the carousel waltz because there was tons for Justin and me to sort of sort through to try to say you're not supposed to dance this, but we're going to dance it.
Right.
You have to introduce all these characters. Will the audience understand them? No dialogue, okay? And we get to the second scene, which is the two of you running away from Mrs. Mullen into this park, this mm-hmm. forest, whatever. And on the very beginning, the two of them started responding to each other. And I cannot tell you what that did to me.
Right.
And to everybody in the room. Because of the nature of their gift, their chemistry together, which was so perfectly matched. Who could know that? We couldn't possibly know
that.
We
never read, we didn't have a moment to get, he never saw us together.
No, we didn't audition together.
Oh, well. So, and suddenly there were two real breathing characters on stage who were setting the bar for everything else. And it all fell away from that. So... I can't take credit for it.
Is there a feminist message in the play as well? Because it's interesting, it's set in an era when women started working in factories and mills, and the musical debuted in 1945,
right.
After World War II had also set many women to work.
Absolutely.
So that's a big part
of
it too, right?
I mean, I think, you know, whenever people say or talk about the Me Too movement, I think, well, this musical, of all musicals, shows how strong these women are. I mean, Julie is pregnant, her husband dies, and she moves on and raises a daughter on her own, which to me in that time was unheard of.
With a community of women.
Right.
Because the people that's...
Her cousin, Nettie, played by Renee, who also runs this spa by herself.
Yep.
You see Carrie really kind of come into her own and end up really taking charge of her household. These are strong women in this piece.
And I have to say that these two, what we discovered, and we talked about a lot in rehearsal, you know, what happens to their friendship. But I think what we decided, and they fight for their friendship in a sort of community, in a social context where her, at that time, I think Mr. Snow, her husband, would have every right to say, you can't hang out with Julie anymore. We're in different social classes now, mm-hmm. and we have a responsibility to our community and to society, and I want you to do this, and I want you to do that. And that's the fun stuff that comes up, I think, in that last scene for the Snows is him sort of trying to take the reins and her saying,
no
way. Come on, I knew you when, and these are my people. And
don't get uppity.
And even somebody like Miss Mullen, you know, played by Margaret Colan, she brings such a tenacity, but even when we meet her in the beginning of the play, she's running her own business. You know, she may attack it in a different way than some of the other women in the play, but, you know, she's fighting for her own too, and she's trying to keep her business running and trying to sustain her life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Lindsay, you said that you were surprised to be called in to audition for Carrie. Why?
Because, well, I always pictured Carrie as a pretty blonde ingenue.
Hmm.
I know Audra McDonald played her, but that felt like a singular performance.
Jesse Mueller played her.
Jesse Mueller played her.
Who was that?
I don't know. Some girl.
I've heard tell.
But I just and so it just never for me. I never thought that was a role I would play. And also, I've never sung in this way before. I'm not a soprano. I don't sing like this.
But
so
you are now.
That was also completely foreign to me. So it was just a lot of. No, when I looked at it, but then when I read it, I thought, I know who this is and I know what I'd like to do. And I came in and did it for Jack, and he liked it too.
Hired her
immediately.
On the spot.
She's the most fun
really?
You can
I
have.
I left the building
spot.
And they called me when I got downstairs.
Fantastic.
It was the quickest job I've ever gotten.
And may I say for me, because she'd run the gamut a little bit earlier, but I hadn't seen her. And she was, in fact, the last person in the room.
Oh, uh-huh. Wow.
There you go.
And I was thinking to myself, I haven't seen it yet. I don't get it. I know I've got a great opportunity here, but I don't. My antenna are not up. I'm not finding that sort of rare voice. And she walked in and just nailed it. And you thought, well, of course, no one else can do this, and no one can.
I'm D.W. Gibson speaking with Jack O'Brien, director of the revival of Carousel, along with two of the show's stars, Jesse Mueller and Lindsay Mendez. Jack, what do you mean when you say the play is a play about redemption? Billy's or?
Well, yes. I mean, you know, one of the things that happened to me when I started preparing for this is that if you know anything about the history of Carousel, it begins with this glorious collection of waltzes that Richard Rodgers wrote. It's known as the Carousel Waltz that introduces the carnival. And there is a carousel usually on stage. And I don't know whether you've thought about this, but do you know what a carousel costs?
I have never considered this question.
Well,
I think you know, though.
It do go round and round. And so you need all of it. And there goes your budget.
Right.
And then guess what else? It never appears
on
the
stage. You never see it again,
no.
Right.
Yeah.
And the end of the piece takes place in heaven, where Billy, after he's dead, has to sort of testify, has to meet the criterion of whether or not he's going to go on or down. Hmm. That's really where the play as a musical lands. And I was very interested in the fact that even in the very bad film that exists and all the productions that I've seen, many of which have been really quite wonderful, that gets the short end of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
even the authors wrote it with a clothesline and tin stars and a ladder. That they were almost embarrassed to discuss any or represent any kind of spirituality. And yet, that's what the piece is about. He has to atone
right.
for his mistakes, of which all of us are riddled. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if for me, it's a piece about redemption and hope. If this can happen to Billy and he can find a way out, why am I sitting back on my hands? I've got work to do here. This period of time given to us where we share the earth and each other and a moment and love and loss, that's the story. Mm. And what are you doing with it?
Right.
Yeah, how do you spend your time here?
Right.
Right.
How do you treat people? How do you?
I think we would be misguided if we did not mention choreography, because it is just remarkable in the production. The performance I was at, one of the longer extended numbers, that is just exhausting to watch. I saw audience members in front of me just sort of waiting for the opportunity to clap, and some of them sort of jumping in the middle of the sequence because they were so eager to, I think, sort of feel in on the energy of the choreography. It was really quite something. Justin Peck is a former choreographer for the New York City Ballet. He created the show. How did he get involved, Jack?
Again, Scott Rudin had seen his work at New York City Ballet, as had I, and he's just burst on the scene with a kind of health, a kind of clarity, a kind of objectivity about what dance can do, what men and women can do
right.
together and separately. And we haven't seen this in a long while. We haven't seen a debut like this, an American debut of a choreographer that just grabs you and says, have you ever seen anything like that before? The number you're talking about, Blow High, Blow Low, mm-hmm. is a throwaway shanty that is very often cut to shreds in the show because it's not a very good piece of music. But Justin saw something in it, and he wanted to invest it with the lore of the sea, about the society of men, people who live by their wits and die by them. And he created something that no one has ever seen in this piece, mm-hmm. for which he justifiably got himself a Tony Award.
Right. I mean, that piece is so muscular and so beautiful. And really, I honestly think the audience expects it to end sort of halfway through, because right. I can imagine that that second, it's going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
it's remarkable that way. Jesse, Lindsay, did you guys, you have a lot of experience as well as trained dancers? Have you?
Well, I was originally in Blow High.
You
and
know what?
My feature was cut. But I was the blow
you're, I would blow low. Blow low.
She was blow high. I was blow low.
Yeah.
No. Funnily enough, I am the only one of the only principals who does not have a dance feature. I mean, I took ballet when I was a little kid, and I've always loved dance. I would call myself more a mover and a shaker than a dancer. Or definitely more.
I love to dance.
But Lindsay
loves to dance. Begged him.
No, insisted.
Insisted
yeah.
that he put me in June Is Busting Out All Over and let me have a dance feature. For weeks, I would say, Justin, when am I going to dance? And he'd laugh. And then I said, get up and teach me some choreography, and I will show you that I can do it. I came in early one day. I was there at 9 o'clock.
Oh,
and he taught me a step, and he said, oh, you do dance. And I was like, yes I do.
Too.
Give me that feature. And then it got bigger and bigger as time went on. Because insisted.
Well, also Justin and I both felt that the audience should not know where dance could come.
Right.
That at any given moment, anybody could dance mm-hmm. and might. And as a result, one of my favorite moments, there's a moment in Blow High, Blow Low that Billy and Jigger dance together.
Right.
I don't think Billy has ever danced
right.
in
right.
any production of the show on record.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
And there's a moment in June, too, one of my favorites. Like you said, it's the moment where you never know where the dance is. People are literally walking across the stage, and all of a sudden they start dancing. But it's seamless. It just
yep.
feels like
yeah.
character. It feels like life.
We love doing that.
Jesse, Lindsay, tell us about the experience of working with Renee Fleming.
Oh, she's a goddess.
What have you learned from her?
But she's a goddess who walks on the earth.
100%. She's so down to earth. She's so...
We're mad for her.
Oh my gosh.
She's
just the greatest.
She's been so encouraging of us.
Yes.
She didn't need to take the time to come to us. And every once in a while, still, she'll say, oh, you're just sounding so beautiful. Or
yeah.
the top, or what you're doing there. I mean, just the encouragement and the sort of selflessness she has about all of it. And the wonderful thing, I think, for us is we get a masterclass 8 times a week. I mean, I literally get to spend her big song, like, in her lungs and solar plexus. Like, I'm hugging her, and I literally get to feel, like, what her instrument is doing. And I do. I watch her,
It's been so wonderful to kind of watch her grab on to the acting of the piece, because it's a very different style, I think, than mm-hmm. what she's done in opera.
Right.
And she
embraced it.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. She's been incredible. And she's grown, you know, along with all of us. And it's just been, it's been amazing. And I think she's loving doing 8 shows a week and being at home. You know, she travels for work nearly every week. So mm-hmm. to get to actually just be in New York, I know she's just loving that and loving the community, the Broadway community. It's been wonderful.
So the challenge of 8 shows a week has the payoff of staying still in your own home.
and using a microphone. Which
oh, right. Yeah.
Good point.
Yes.
Not to be underestimated. What went into the decision about the Tony presentation? Most of the musicals did a sampler of the variety of songs, but your cast did the entire Clambake song.
No, we did Blow High. I think because we knew that of all the possible moments of being arrested, this would knock the audience out. And there is no other real dancing of its kind in the season, not on that level. And so, you know, I think we all collectively felt that we wanted to put something down on the table that you would not expect. And not a medley and not little moments here and there, but one solid number that says, this is what we do.
Right. Well, I would just echo Mr. Brantley's words that the tragic inevitability of the play comes across warmly and chillingly, and it is a complex and wonderful production, and I congratulate you all. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
I'm D.W. Gibson, and I've been speaking with director Jack O'Brien about the new production of Carousel, along with stars Jesse Mueller and Lindsay Mendez.